society. When there is no intention of society or the parliament to impose views on any churches. Why do you think that's right?
Shall I go first?
Sure.
I don't think this is about imposing your views on others. Apart from the fact that we do impose certain things on others, that the law is about imposing things on others for the good of society, but I'm not actually arguing in favour of imposing anything. After all, everyone has the same rights already. The irony about this whole debate is that it really isn't about equality at all. Marriage is between a man and a woman. That is the definitional core of marriage from our evolutionary history. And actually, any same-sex attracted man can marry any woman he wants, and the other way around. This is not about equality for the very simple reason that anyone has access to that basic institution. What you're arguing for, really, is that we redefine marriage to include not just a man, you know, one man and one woman, but two men or two women. And so then you have to answer the question, well, why not go further than that? What is your grounding principle? And now I'd be asking you a question, which I really shouldn't do. But my point is, this is not about me imposing something on anyone else. This is me simply saying, look, I recognize what is already the case, what has always been the case from our evolutionary history, that marriage is between one man and one woman. And I'm arguing that if we try to redefine that, that will have socially deleterious effects on society. And that's simply it. So this isn't about me imposing my views. This is actually about one group trying to impose their views on everyone else by redefining a basic social institution. For what? What positive good could come of that? I don't think anything could.
Could I just add to that as well? My reason, to answer your question, is history. I was involved 15 years ago in a debate on television about gay adoption. And I was... At the time, I suggested that adoption agencies who wouldn't go along with that would be in trouble, and I was laughed out of court and told, don't be ridiculous, you're an extremist. There are now hundreds of children who cannot be adopted by Catholic adoption agencies because they've been forced to close, because they did not agree with gay adoption. My view of this thing is something initially becomes permissive in the name of liberty and equality. It's not long before it happens to be declarative and suddenly it's being enforced. That is the history of what has happened when you make the state God and the imposer of our morality.
Mm-hmm. So I'll go to the question that I almost asked. Essentially, the argument simply is this. If you are going to say we can redefine marriage for one particular sexual minority because we happen to now affirm their relationship, then what is your grounding principle for saying yes to that one particular sexual minority and no to any others? Are you in favour of polyamory, polygamy being recognised under the law? If not, why not? What is your grounding principle? And if there isn't a grounding principle, then will you admit that the argument holds?
Is that to me?
Either of you, it's
well, I'd be happy to take that question on the understanding that it's nothing to do with tonight's debate. You want me to answer whether I'm in favour of the law recognising polygamous or polyamorous relationships, multiple, more than two partners in a domestic relationship. You know, I'm prepared to answer that, but it has nothing to do, no answer that I could possibly give. It tells me why same-sex couples shouldn't be allowed to marry in the same way that mixed-sex couples are.
Would you like me to clarify why it does, then?
Well, you know, let me give the answer to the question you asked first. My feeling is that even if there was a strong demand from people in polygamous relationships to have some form of legal recognition, it's more likely to be successful for their interests and more likely to be acceptable to wider society if it's an understanding of how cohabitation law applies to them. Because their relationships are structured in a wide range of different ways, I don't personally think that there's a form of marriage, any form of multiple partner marriage that I could think of that would meet their needs. People in that situation need to be protected from being economically vulnerable if a relationship breaks down, in just the same way as anybody else needs to be protected from being economically vulnerable if a cohabitation breaks down. And so that's the way in which I think their interests should be reflected. And I don't think that there's a strong demand for anything else.
Sure. Well, the reason why it's relevant to this discussion is not because anyone... Actually, in other countries, they are arguing for this. We already have seen it happen. We've seen it happen with the Samenlevingskontrakt in the Netherlands. We've already seen it happen in Brazil, where, in fact, civil partnerships have become not just between one man and one woman, but between two women and one man. So we've already seen this happen. The point is not, do you want it to happen, but why shouldn't we do it? In other words, what I'm saying is, if we allow the redefinition of marriage for one particular sexual minority, we don't have a grounding principle to say no to any other. And given that, as I asked you before, that would be not something which would be interest of the common good, why you know, need to have that grounding principle? It, not now, but and some people are, actually. There are some Muslim groups who would like to see it happen. There are polygamous groups who would like to see it happen, actually. There's a very... If you'd like to look at Plural Unions, which is a Twitter account, which is a serious movement abroad and in this country, which actually does want to introduce plural unions in this country. They give very, very good arguments in favour of it, precisely because they're saying, look, we're doing it for same-sex attracted couples, why not for us? What's your beef against them?
The issue is here... is that we are democratically elected and we are guided by the people who vote for us. And we are.
What?
Willie,
yeah? No, we are. We are.
Willie, finish your point.
No. Yeah. We are guided by the people who vote for us. If people don't like what we do, we don't get re-elected. It's as simple as that. Now, many of my colleagues didn't get re-elected in May and they didn't get re-elected the prior to that as well. But we are guided by what the electorate say. That's what guides us in democratic politics. Now, just because some parties are in favour of cutting tax doesn't mean they're in favour of abolishing it. Just because you do the thin end of the wedge, as you would describe it, doesn't necessarily logically lead to that point, to the extreme point. And there is no point in stating the extreme cases as something against, which is something which is mainstream. This is reasonable, which, as I say, most people, two-thirds in, and somebody criticised this, the social studies attitude, sorry, social attitude study. It's a sample of 3,000. Most opinion polls that you do are only 1,000. This is extremely well-founded opinion poll on public opinion. That should not be dismissed. This is mainstream. Nothing else is on the table. And for fear of laughter again, politicians are guided and governments have been kicked out because they do not do what their electorates want. That is the guiding principle of democratic politics, and that's what we're into.
Patrick,
question? Yeah, my turn to ask a question. I would like to ask Peter a question, if that's all right. Peter, at one point, in fact, for quite a lot of your presentation, you said this isn't about sex, this isn't about judging anyone's lifestyle or sexual relationships. But you then went on sort of quite a lengthy discussion about how human sexuality has evolved and using the evolutionary basis of our predominant sexual choices as the argument in favour of legislation protecting those choices that we make. We've evolved to be less promiscuous than bonobos, that evolved to be a situation where most societies have a predominance of long-term relationships which are called, recognized as marriage. Now, if that evolutionary basis is your argument for legal recognition, then surely all the relationships which evolution has given us, all the diversity and variety that evolution has given us should be recognised in law as well. You say the prevalence of monogamous relationships is part of our evolution. Well, so am I.
Sorry, the prevalence of polygamous relationships. I didn't actually say that.
Monogamous relationships.
Monogamous relationships, okay. Not all relationships are from evolution. We have evolved with a particular form of relationship to form the family unit. That was the case I'm making. I actually wasn't talking about sexuality per se at all. What I was talking about was relationships and the state's case and the state's interest in prescribing the relational ideal precisely for the best conditions being formed for the bringing up of children. That's the case I'm making. This isn't about sex. This is about marriage. Marriage is about families, and families are the bedrock of our society. That's the connection.
So, you see the contradiction between, on the one hand, saying you're not here to judge anyone's lifestyle, and then using a phrase like relational ideal.
See, I'm making a difference between the moral and the political. The relational ideal has nothing to do with morality. I mean, it does, but the fundamental difference between what I'm saying and what someone else might say would be making a moral judgment. I'm not saying that it's immoral in this particular discussion to engage in one particular sexual lifestyle or another. That's not relevant to the question that we're having here. This is about what is in the interest of the common good.
Mm-hmm. Right. I still don't see why the common good is harmed if
well, I gave the reasons.
Two men get married then.
So I gave the reasons why redefining marriage, if you want to redefine marriage, then that does have socially deleterious effects. On the one hand, it does help us down the road towards saying, actually, that there is no relational ideal for bringing up children, which does, I believe, harm children, because there is a relational ideal for the bringing up of children. You still haven't really basically given me a grounding principle why we shouldn't go further down the road of redefining marriage further. And that's something which would be against the common good as well. And there are actual bad effects we've seen in foreign countries with regards to religious freedom. It's not necessarily about forcing churches to conduct same-sex weddings, although that is a possibility. And there was a particular Tory MP near around Brighton who did argue that if any church refused to provide same-sex weddings, then they should be totally barred from having anything to do with civil weddings. That's one thing, but actually it's also about equality legislation, it's about being fined for not having the right social attitudes. Those are real concerns, and you haven't addressed any of these concerns at all, despite the fact that they are fundamental to the common good.
I'm not there for questions, I think. And finally, David.
I have, yeah. I'm stunned, actually. I'm not often stunned. I'm stunned because I thought faith statements were going to come from our side, not yours.
Yes.
And to hear that our politicians think that they are guided by the electorate is one of the most extraordinary faith statements I've ever heard. I would love to see, if that was the case, why not have a referendum on this? But the question I really want to ask Willie Rennie is simply this. If I refuse to marry a couple because one person was black and the other was white, do you think I should be protected because of my religion?
Say that again.
If a couple came to me and said, we'd like to get married, and I looked and I saw that one was black and the other was white, and I refused because of their skin color, do you think I should be protected from prosecution because of my religion?
Prosecution on what charge?
Racially refusing to marry someone on the grounds of race.
That's not a criminal offence.
So in this country, you could refuse to marry someone on the grounds of race and you could not be prosecuted for it?
I don't know. But it would be an interesting test case.
Yes, it would be a very interesting test case. I'm asking, do you think I should be excused because of my religion?
I don't think that's central to your religious philosophy.
Well, you're making a judgment.
But it's my religion. I could say, well, it is actually. I met a guy once from the island of Lewis who said he was a British Israelite who believed that the Brits, especially the Celts, were the lost tribe of Judah, and the whites were going to take over the world. So he could say it was his religion. I'm sorry, I'm with my atheist friends on this one, because I think using religion as an excuse for prejudice or homophobia or anything is outrageous. And I'm just intrigued that you're seeming to want to defend, saying, well, because you wouldn't defend. I know that you wouldn't defend me racially discriminating on the grounds of religion.
It would be despicable.
Yes, it would be despicable.
I don't know whether it would be criminal or not.
Yes, it would be despicable, and I think it would be despicable. But the point is that if your whole argument is about equality, what distinction can be made within 5 years' time? People are going to be looking and baying and going, what? You won't marry a couple who are homosexual? That's terrible, you racist. It's the same thing. And we're already getting towards that.
I hope that we get to a position where people would respond in that way and say that it was terrible to turn a gay couple away. I don't want to criminalise people for doing that.
But
I hope that we get to a point where society isn't tolerant of that kind of homophobia. I absolutely do.
Well, but then, if you're going to go along with your colleague and be guided by the electorate, you are then going to have to legislate against those of us who think that marriage is between one man and one woman.
Why?
And I absolutely resent the implication, which is continually stated, and I think it's factually wrong, to say that because we believe marriage is between one man and one woman, that therefore we are homophobic.
Amen.
It's wrong.
I would just say to that there is a difference between finding homophobia and racism despicable, despicable. There's a difference between that and saying that people should be criminalized in all of the circumstances that you've just described. I would hope that we get to a point where any church would kick someone out for racism or for homophobia. I know that's not going to happen overnight, and they're going to have to come to that in their own good time, if they do at all. But as someone who's not religious, it wouldn't bother me one whit if a church wanted to continue to look mean enough and selfish enough and irrelevant enough to the modern age that they continue to say no to same-sex couples.
Okay. Well, that was our conversation. Over to you. We're going to have some microphones. We set them up on either side there. Queue in an orderly fashion, and I think we'll probably simply get away with alternating between the two. But it would be very helpful, I'm sure, to the speakers here if you are short and get straight to your question, but also perhaps direct the question to one of the speakers in particular, although any of the others may well choose to pick it up as well. So we'll start on that side.
To the opposition, either side. I don't quite know if gay marriage would have the social deteriorative effect that you say. I think this idea that the slippery slope that we're setting on is going to lead us to another thing is based on paranoia and not the sense that it's the job of the legislation and not the implementation of a law and not its legislation. For example, the idea that the pill was introduced for women and that rights were introduced for women in the workplace, the fear was that this would completely break down society, break down traditional family values. Yes, there have been problems as a result of this, but this didn't stop its implementation and allow equality for all, which I would think is what this debate is all about.
Okay, I'll take that one, because the slippery slope argument, I remember when civil partnerships were introduced, that we were told, that's it. We were told that this gave all the legal rights, everything else, and no, gay marriage would not be happening. And again at that time, when there were those of us who said, yes, it will, we were mocked and laughed at and accused of being extremists and homophobic and so on. So I think that the slippery slope argument, even more so and much more significant, is this, that we are redefining marriage for everyone. And I would challenge anyone here, I'm a historian, I would challenge anyone here to name one society in history where that has happened and it has been successful. We are throwing something out for a social experiment for short-term effects in the name of equality.
I'd say the Church of England did that for divorce.
Church of England redefined. Well, actually, if you want harmful effects, then maybe the legislation on divorce. There's been considerable harmful effects from that as well. So if you wanted to go down that route, I'd be prepared to go down that route. I'd be prepared to accept that. I don't think the Church of England has had, if you like, or any church, has the right to redefine in that sense. I do not believe. Our main point here, which the other side have not answered, is if the state takes to itself the right to redefine now, then why should the state not have the right in 5 years' time to redefine again? And no one has answered that.
Incidentally, divorce is not a redefinition of marriage.
That's enough slippery slopes. Over a question this side.
Hi there. I'm struggling with this subject because I'm a Christian and some of my best friends are gay. I'm Dutch as well. Makes it harder.
I'm so sorry.
That works.
In Holland, we've had it for decades, gay marriage. And we had the discussion, just like here. But nobody told us what would come afterwards. We hear a lot of things in the newspapers. We don't hear what comes afterwards. This year, after 23 years of marriage, my mother could not use her family name anymore because of equal rights. In Holland, it came to the point she has to go back to the name she's born with. It's just a next step. Where do you stop here in Scotland? How much rights do you lose in marriage as a different sex couple?
I'm not quite sure I understand the example you're using. I don't understand how someone would be legally told what name they're allowed to use.
Because everybody has single rights. It means if you're getting married, a man shouldn't have more rights to give the whole family the name. The woman should have her right to her name. The man should have his right to his name. And no rights anymore for what your own wishes are.
Well, I really don't know what the context of law is in the Netherlands, but certainly what you're describing has no place at all in the Scottish government's proposals or the UK government's proposals.
That's what we heard 20 years ago in Holland. Thanks.
This is partly an argument against any change.
Mm.
That's the problem. Yeah. The governments propose change all the time. It doesn't mean that you go to the extreme with that change. It's an argument for ultra-conservatism that nothing ever happens and we stay all the same. That's not a kind of society I want. I want progress.
Well, I would say the meaning of a word should stay the same.
The meaning will stay the same.
I mean, you changed the meaning of the word marriage.
Yes.
Could you next change the meaning, meaning of the word dwarf so I can fit in as well?
Just because the whole issue of slippery slopes has crept up twice now, the way that you discern between a good and a bad slippery slope argument is whether or not, A, the change follows on logically from the other, B, if you have evidence that it's actually happened and is happening. We do see in other countries the change from having redefining marriage in one way to now redefining those established, affirmed government-sanctioned relationships to another. We've seen it in Brazil. We've seen it in America. Sorry. What was it? Yeah. Brazil, we've seen it in America, we've seen it in Canada, we've seen it in the Netherlands. And that's where I brought in the same as Leven's contract. We've seen it already happen. It also follows on logically, we still haven't heard a grounding argument from the other side as to why it should not be the case that since we've redefined marriage in one way, we can't redefine it in another. I'm not arguing they want that. I'm not arguing that there is a great constituency at the moment for that. But I'm saying you are left with absolutely no grounding principle for it to be the case. And since we have seen it abroad, I think the argument's proved. And they have no argument to that.